Application for Monday, February 12th, 2018. Mrs. Schwartz, will you please take the roll call?
Mrs. Fairgreath?
Here.
Mr. Gaffney?
Here.
Mrs. Linkamer?
Here.
Mr. Mannheim?
Here.
Mr. McNally?
Here.
Ms. Weibel?
Here.
Mrs. Yule?
Here. Would you all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all for coming tonight. Tonight, the first item on the agenda, as always, is citizen comments. And there it is. Thank you. Mrs. Linkamer, would you read our statement, please?
The school code provides for a public comment period at each board meeting, subject to reasonable constraints. The practice of this board is to limit public comment to 3 minutes per speaker to a total of 30 minutes per meeting. Speakers addressing the board are expected to maintain a reasonable level of civility. Also, personnel matters are sensitive and confidential. Comments regarding individuals should be respectful. Insults and defamatory remarks have no place in this setting. The board will terminate public comment if speakers cannot adhere to these guidelines. Please identify yourself at the beginning of your remarks.
Thank you, Mrs. Linkamer. Today we have 7 speakers. And the first speaker is Bobby Rail, speaking on empty seats.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I did pass some papers out. I think it's next to Dr. Pearson. Okay, thank you. The first sheet is really my position on the 1,700 empty seats. The second sheet is the data on early education currently. And the third sheet is why I think Lincoln is not viable for the future. Oh, there we go. I don't have, I cannot go over the sheet in 3 minutes, so I would ask that you read it. I may speak next time, but my concern really is I think there's a short-term and a long-term way to look at the 1,700 empty seats. Currently, we are using space differently in the proposal and not reducing space. I think a better alternative long-term would be to reduce space by looking at schools that aren't viable for the future. And in my questions and asking for data, I learned that the board has not looked at early education for 3 years. And they certainly haven't discussed what it means to centralize. And there are many things that should be discussed about that. Number one, what should the preschool size be? Preschool, as you know, is one of the 3 components of early education, and it is funded by tuition for not-at-risk students, and we currently don't have any limit on how big it should be. There's also early childhood that is a special education program. There's a pre-K part of the early education that is for at-risk students, and that is funded by grants. But the preschool is through tuition, and I think you should decide how big that should be. I would prefer that you look at schools that are not viable. I think Lincoln is not viable for the future simply because it cannot house the programs that children need. And you have this exodus of children to the point where it drops the enrollment by 40, class sizes go down. There are 7 of 11 classrooms that currently are 20 and under that will continue. You can't fix it because you can't keep the programs there. So it's not viable for the future. In summary, it's not possible to take 2 schools out on the east side and still maintain what we talk about, walkers walking and neighborhood schools. Lincoln can be absorbed by Munhall and Fox Ridge. They should remain because they're the newer 2 schools on the east side. And for the vitality of the east side And the future, in terms of longevity, those two newer elementary schools should remain. So I would ask that the board retreats, go back and look at what it means to be centralized from a decentralized location. I'm not even against starting and building a new building, and I know what other districts have done in terms of selling off land. I'm almost done, one sentence. And using that to pay for half the center, enlarging their preschool, using tuition to pay for the others. Just because we have extra buildings doesn't mean that they're all viable for the future. But you cannot take away two on the east side and still have the neighborhood concept. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Rao. I'm sorry. There we go. Okay. The next speaker is Nancy Garrison from Lincoln. Or about Lincoln. Thank you. Well,
thanks. Hi again. If you don't remember me, my name is Nancy Garrison, and I've had three children who have successfully graduated from Lincoln. I also live in Lincoln's neighborhood about four blocks south of the school. I didn't think I would need to come back here so soon to fight for Lincoln. However, by all appearances, the loudest public voices put Lincoln into this conversation that clearly the administration never intended to have. Last time, our goal was to save Lincoln. We expressed to you all the reasons that Lincoln should remain a viable part of the D303 community. You heard us. The reasons haven't changed. Now, it's more than just saving Lincoln. Lincoln is an integral component of D303 and St. Charles. Lincoln is so much more than the smallest school in the district. It has impact on the kids that attend, the staff that works there, the neighbors close by, the entire school district, and thus the city of St. Charles. Keeping Lincoln a thriving contributor to the district is important to all of us. First, let's look back at why Lincoln remained open. One, the growing downtown population. The downtown is the heart of the city, and families are moving there. A neighborhood school so close to downtown is part of the appeal of St. Charles. We want to be the city where you can walk downtown and to your school. Two, the downtown businesses. Last time, we had over 50 businesses physically sign a petition stating that closing Lincoln would affect their business. You heard from business owners who expressed this. They explained that when St. Pat's moved to the far west side, it impacted their businesses. These businesses want to keep schools in the downtown, and they continue to support keeping Lincoln open. Three, community support. We had over 900 citizens sign a petition, again, physically sign a petition, stating that they wanted to keep Lincoln open. These signatures were from the entire community, from the east side to the west side. Obviously, lots of families from Lincoln, past and present, but also from the rest of the community who feel that keeping this historical school in downtown is good for all. I know you know what a great school and community that is Lincoln. You know that the building is not in disrepair. The kids have fun on the playground. They can play with balls and they play in the snow. And as I stated previously, Lincoln is so much more than the smallest school in D303. It allows our district to be diversified and able to accommodate learners who need a smaller environment. I've talked to a number of families who have chose Lincoln for its size. Lincoln is and will remain a successful school if given the chance. It is a key part of D303 elementary schools and to the entire city. Thank you for your time.
The next speaker is, oh, I keep doing this. There's, okay. Next speaker is Lisa Moline, Lincoln. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Moline. I'm a parent at Lincoln and the president of the PTO. I'm also a former D303 educator, having worked at Anderson Elementary. In referencing the proposal already put forth by the district on January 18th, Lincoln, along with all the other schools in the district, was analyzed for closure or repurposing. After having done the research, the administration had come to the conclusion that it's not a wise move to close a building in an area that is still continuing to experience growth, as the downtown area is. The mission of the board and the administration has continually been to keep students walking. Closing Lincoln puts more students on a bus to drive across town past Lincoln School, which at that moment would be a vacant building since there is no plan for it. If our walkers get bused to another school, what's happening to that school? Will they also be affected by this change? This will not minimize the amounts of students impacted, which was one of the goals that was stated. Leading to my next point, in 2015, when Lincoln was on the table for closure, there was no plan for what was going to happen to the building, to the land where a school has stood for 100 years. This time around, with another school being repurposed, there is a plan. Close Lincoln with no building, with no plan, and the building sits. The neighborhood suffers. A vacant building in the downtown area that is still trying to fill vacant space. Tear it down for the land, and you are saying that the rich history that St. Charles prides itself upon is no longer important. My final point deals not with buildings, but with the education of the students in our building. As PTO president, I am approached often by the teachers who have funds to spend that have been allocated to them by the PTO. They ask me if what they're looking to purchase and what they're looking to buy is within our mission statement. And I had a teacher come to me just last week asking if she should spend the funds that have already been allocated to her for this year on technology for the students. I said to her, will the students benefit this year from those funds, from this technology? She said, yes, but what about next year? And this continues to happen to us. As we're continually put on the chopping block, so to speak, we are continually having to face the challenge of what's going to happen to us next year. This poses a problem for our volunteers who are trying to build a better school community, but when we're doing so with such uncertainty, it gives everybody a problem, not just the parents, not just you guys as the board, but also for our students. By putting them in an environment where, though our teachers and our principal have done an outstanding job as to keeping it strictly business and in their education and learning, kids talk. My kids got into the car the first day after this had happened, before I had even said anything to them, and they said, is Lincoln closing again? We've gone through this year after year. We had to dust off our Save Lincoln signs and our T-shirts from the last time. And it just is time for a decision to be made. One way or another, what's going to happen to us? And if you take a look at everything that we've talked about, we deserve a plan. And so does everybody else in the district. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker is Laura Christopher Lincoln. Welcome.
Hi, good evening. My name is Laura Christopher. I have a first grader and a third grader at Lincoln. Last night, before sitting down to write this speech, for inspiration, I asked my kids, what do you love about Lincoln? In typical fashion, my third grade son said, dismissal, and when prompted further, recess. Any fox chase parents of third grade boys out there, please reassure your children. We have both of these things at Lincoln, dismissal and recess. But all joking aside, my son plays violin, participates in student council, and was recently tested to take part in the AT literacy program next year. As you can see, our Lincoln students thrive both academically and socially and have the same meaningful opportunities students have at all of the other buildings. When I asked my daughter what she loved best about Lincoln, she didn't hesitate before sharing the teachers. Back in January, we had a similar discussion when I found out my neighborhood could potentially be reassigned to Belgram under the new boundaries. I shared the news with my school-aged children and sadly watched my strong and vibrant first grade daughter crumble. When I asked her then what she would miss most, she thoughtfully considered the question, then responded with two words, Mr. Navis. For those who do not recognize the name, Mr. Navis is our school's amazing physical education teacher. My daughter, however, was not saying to me that she would miss PE the most. Through tears, she looked up at me and said, I will miss the way he stands outside of Lincoln and greets our bus every day. I realized what she was really saying in her first grade way is she will miss the one-on-one connection she has with the staff members at our comfortably small neighborhood school. All of the students at Lincoln are surrounded by an amazingly cohesive staff. The size of the school is not intimidating nor overwhelming. Because of the size of the building, staff members are quickly able to form personal connections with all of the students and their families. We moved to St. Charles in 2012. When I found out my kids would go to Lincoln, I started talking with everyone I met, including neighbors, friends, and other parents I encountered at my children's activities. I felt so reassured by the feedback I received about Lincoln, but it almost seemed too good to be true. I am not even exaggerating when I say I did not hear one negative thing said about Lincoln. Nobody complained about the lack of green space or the gym that doubled as a lunchroom. Over and over, I heard people say what a great little school Lincoln was. I know you'll love it. We loved it. Our kids loved it. Was there something in the water that these parents were drinking, or was Lincoln truly that fantastic? Once my oldest started kindergarten, it didn't take long for me to realize all of these people were right. Something about Lincoln School is truly magical, and it is in the smiling faces of staff members as much as it is in the ornate woodwork. A newer school couldn't best Lincoln, nor should a larger building be seen as better simply because it houses more students. In my family, we teach our kids it is what's inside that matters. If you look at our school from this perspective and use this criteria to determine its value in our community, I know you'll find Lincoln is worth its weight in gold. I didn't realize it at the time, but Lincoln embodies everything I moved here for: character, culture, and a longstanding history of educational excellence. Please ask yourselves if this is a school our community could afford to lose. First ask, is it necessary? And then, what value would closing Lincoln bring to our community? One more thing for the record. In my opinion, a school that has been thriving in our community for almost 90 years has more than proven its viability in our district. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christopher. Next speaker is Danielle Penman on Fox Ridge. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a parent at Fox Ridge, and I am a community member. I just kind of wanted to summarize for those of you who have not been here along this journey, and it's been a short journey. Our first presentation about the closing and repurposing of Fox Ridge occurred on January 18th. 8 short days later, there was 2 community forums in between. On January 30th, there was another presentation, at which time the board felt that there was not sufficient information provided and that perhaps a second school should be closed. And administration was asked to then go for and produce a new proposal. Tomorrow, I found out that the administration is going to present to all the schools their new proposal before it's being presented to the board and the community, so that the teachers and staff understand parts of the new proposal. It's been a total of 23 days since this whole transaction has occurred. I think I really advise strongly that we need to slow down. There's a lot of inconsistencies. Community members have been gathering data, I being one of them. There's a lot of inconsistencies and bad data, old data being used. Nobody wants Lincoln closed. Nobody wants Fox Ridge closed. There are better options. I strongly urge the board to dismiss the proposals. There are multiple factors making them invalid. 9 days from now is not a sufficient enough time to develop a very well thought out, with good research, good, valid, up-to-date data, to come back to this board and provide information that would strongly make you want to close one school or 2 schools. There are other options, and there are people in the community willing to give the board proposals that make sense, that have less of an impact. You're impacting children, number one. Now we have 2 schools full of children that are upset. You have parents that are upset, 2 schools, and a community that are supporting these 2 schools. And you have staff that are upset, that have to go through who knows how many more meetings and the uncertainty. And it's not fair, it's not right. And I'm sorry, I'm very disappointed at this administration. To come before a board and to come before a community using old data, I found many discrepancies, and I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm happy to talk to you guys about what I've found. And I've updated data, statistics, and studies that back why closing any of the schools in this district is wrong. There's other opportunities to improve the situation if we need to. Closing Fox Ridge and closing Lincoln should not be on your radar at all. And I really strongly urge the board, please take time, collect the data. I have copies for you of the stuff that there's a lot of missing information here. It's insufficient. Support your community and your schools and don't close them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Johnson, Fox Ridge. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mike Johnson. I'm the parent of a teenage girl who went to Fox Ridge and the parent of a 2-year-old who I hope will go to Fox Ridge. I came here 2 weeks ago to urge you to close no schools. Instead, the meeting ended with 2 possible school closings. I worry that there is a lack of options being considered here. All we hear is close Fox Ridge and now Lincoln as well. But there are really four options, and each should be discussed carefully with the best and latest data available to you. One, do nothing. Two, redistrict only. Three, close Fox Ridge and redistrict. And four, close Fox Ridge and Lincoln as well as redistricting. Based on the data that has been provided to the board from the administration, I believe the only safe decision at this time should be to do nothing or redistrict only. The problem with closing schools is that the data being provided to you in order to make such a large decision is outdated and I believe inaccurate. You, the board, is making your decision from a demographic report that was created in early 2015. It is now 2018. I would like to give you some examples of what has changed since the demographic report was completed. In the 2014 to 2015 season, there were 704 homes sold in the town of St. Charles, and 124 of those were foreclosures and short sales. This last year, there were 804 sales, and 54 of those were foreclosures and short sales. That is an increase of 19% in sales and a decrease in foreclosures and short sales of 230%. That is a large change within our community. Not to mention the live birth data was from 2012 numbers. The students, parents, teachers, and staff of Fox Ridge and Lincoln deserve the fate of their schools to be determined with the most up-to-date information. Please, before any decision, including closing a school, is made, have an updated demographics report completed. Besides the problem with the data, I want to talk about two phrases that I've been hearing over and over again. 1,700 empty seats and below capacity. Both of these phrases, which seem to be the driving force of this proposal, I believe mean nothing. Right now, according to both the administration numbers and the Illinois report card numbers, there is a district-wide average of 24 students or seats per classroom. If I went into each classroom and took three seats, making the average classroom size 21, then we would go from a capacity of 74% to 84%. This would require only redistricting and not closing schools. Would anybody here be okay with a classroom size of 21? I think most students, teachers, parents would be. This would allow Fox Ridge and Lincoln to stay open. Please direct the administration to complete an up-to-date demographics report and run the numbers on what the district would look like with an average classroom size of 21 students before any decisions are made. I would rather put 1,700 seats in storage than one or two schools, because if and when you need them again, it is a lot easier and less expensive to grab some seats out of storage than to reopen or build some schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final speaker tonight is Michelle Thompson, speaking on the proposed changes.
My name is Michelle Thompson. We have not heard whether the district has given the board the information they requested on January 30th. The board needs to see a cost analysis and detailed enrollment projection by school, grade, and section at minimum students of 24, 25, and 27 per class in order to determine what decisions need to be made. The board also needs to see the impact of opening or not opening new sections at schools. If no new sections are opened, we will have more overcrowded classes at 27 students per class next year. Opening new sections and allocating teachers to those sections is vital to accomplish the right sizing of the schools. The 305 parents on our Facebook page agree that cap and send practice needs to either go away or a maximum number of students per class needs to be established. The district decided to pick 27 cap and send. That is two student difference, and did not look at any other numbers. How do they know 27 is the number that will right size the schools? How do they know 10 teachers is enough? What classes will have new sections opened up next year? Bottom line, how can you ask us to trust the district again with making this decision for our already capped classes next year? Our 305 parents want to better understand the real goal of the district. I have been reading and hearing so many stories of the negative impact of cap and send practice. By capping and sending for years, the district has created educational curriculum and class size disparity. This in turn has caused many students to have educational gaps and fall behind. If the district's goal was truly to create equal educational experiences for our students, we would not have such disparity among the schools. It looks more like the district's true goal is to save money so they can restrict resources at some schools and allocate resources to other schools. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That concludes citizen comments for today. Here's our list. Thank you, everyone. The next item on the agenda is the superintendent's report. Dr. Pearson?
Great. Thank you, Ms. Huell. I just have three items that I wanted to highlight for you this evening. The first one is, as we all know, because we have experienced it, Friday was kind of our first big snow of the year. A matter of fact, it was one of our first big snows in quite a while in the district. We've had a couple of years that were not quite as impactful. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to recognize Mr. Baird and our team in our operations and maintenance department. I don't think people realize the amount of time and effort it takes to make sure that our sidewalks are clear and that our parking lots are clear and that we're able to offer our programs and services to our students and families. It's many, many, many hours. They get up very early in the morning to do that. And I want to say kudos to him and his team. They spent most of the weekend removing snow, and we just really appreciate all of their work and their efforts. So thank you, Mr. Baird, for that. I also wanted to highlight for you that we are moving forward with plans for our incubator EDU program, which you heard about in the fall. This month, Dr. Byrne, who is one of our associate directors of curriculum, was able to secure our community champions for that program, which is a really vital part of that. And I just wanted to point out to you that our mayor, Ray Regina, the president of the St. Charles Chamber, Jim DiCella, the executive director of the St. Charles Downtown Partnership, Jenna Sawick, and the events and development manager of the St. Charles Downtown Partnership, Laura Jacqueline Purdy, all agreed to be our co-community champions. And it's a really important part of our program. These leaders in our community help us secure business leaders across the community to participate in supporting our entrepreneurship program at the high school and Incubator EDU. And so we are very excited to have them join our team and to volunteer to provide that leadership for our program at the high school, at both high schools. That's a tremendous testament to our community, and it's going to be a lasting benefit for our students. So I just wanted to publicly recognize and thank them for that work. And then I also wanted to point out that in addition to the Random Acts of Kindness Week that's happening across the community. It is Hope Week at both our high schools and middle schools. Hope Week is something that was started several years ago as a part of our work with supporting positive mental health in our students and suicide prevention and awareness. And so both of our middle schools and both of our high schools have Hope Week activities all week this week. You may have noticed there are windows painted throughout the community to kind of recognize and celebrate positive support of student mental health and student mental health issues. So Hope Week at middle schools and high schools. Thank you, Ms. Huell.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Pearson. Well, the board has been very busy, and we've had a lot of meetings, so I had to go back and kind of add them up. A good 11 or 12 meetings since our last meeting. But I'll start with, I'd like to start with committee reports, and we'll start with a very significant one, Mr. McNally. Learning and teaching.
Very, very long meeting, but because it was such a long meeting and kind of really was about the boundaries and enrollment, I'm going to defer to the website for most of the information. I did want to recognize there were two people recognized at the meeting that kind of in all of that got maybe kind of lost up. Mr. Dan Rortvedt, Assistant Technology Facilitator, was selected to present his doctoral research at the National Occupational Therapist Conference in February. And on January 17th, Project Synergy welcomed approximately 100 people to the annual family meeting at North High School. Current cohort for Project Synergy is the third Project Synergy cohort in the district. Just real quickly on the boundary enrollment presentation, we had we had 22 speakers signed up, and I think we had 20 or 21 of them actually speak. It was on boundaries and enrollment. We had suggestions, as we've heard tonight, for additional considerations, additional school closure consideration, boundary tweaking. The presentation is on the website, and there is going to be another in-depth discussion next week on February 20th. And what's the time? That's 6:30, is it? 6:30. Okay, at Redling. Okay. And that completes my report.
And is that, I can't remember, is that the learning teaching meeting also?
It's learning and teaching, but we've kind of canceled learning and teaching in order to accommodate this meeting.
So, I thought maybe we could talk about park testing.
I think that's a back burner for right now, but yeah. I do want to get to that. So,
I think it's been completed, that conversational. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next.
Sorry, I have a question. Mr. McNally, when are we having a learning and teaching meeting then covering learning and teaching?
We have not rescheduled that meeting as yet. I think the next scheduled meeting is in March.
That's probably it.
Yeah, I mean. So with the additional meetings we've had. I think we've been kind of preempted by this right now. This turned into a much bigger discussion than I think it was originally going to be. So I was a bit distressed to see that that was canceled, but it's I understand why. So
Thank you for giving up your slot. And not adding, so we didn't have to add another meeting on, to be quite honest, right? Okay, thank you. The next committee to present would be Business Services. Mr. Mannheim.
Thank you. We met on January 25th. Our first four items are for information, and they were the financial reports for Mid-Valley for November as well as December. And then we had the financial reports for D-03 for November and December. And the reason that there's four is because we did not meet in December. So we were kind of catching up there. Our next item was item E, which was our designation of individual, which will be Dr. Chapman, to prepare the 2018-19 budget. And that's something that we do every year. We have to, and it always falls on Dr. Chapman. Our next item kind of pertains to that as well, which is our budget calendar that we set for 18-19, and that is also for information. Our next item, we had Mike Francis from Forecast 5 come in and use the five-year forecasting model, which helps us kind of set our base for the budget process and kind of gives us a look 5 years down the road on the decisions we make for this coming year. So that's for information as well in your packet. Our next item will be on for action, which is our school fees for the fiscal year of 18-19. It's something we look at every year and make tweaks as we need necessary, and that's on for action. Our next item was the Microsoft agreement support renewal. That was something that was brought by Mr. Smith. That's on for consent. Our next item was the website refresh, and it's on for consent tonight, and that's just basically kind of the contract. The content will be coming to community relations in their March meeting, and they'll kind of work on developing some things that we want to see and new things that'll be on the website and kind of bringing us up to today's standards of website and things we want to get out to the community. Okay. Our next item was the annual laser fish maintenance support renewal. That's on for consent. Our next two items pertain to technology as well, which is our Mac desktop replacement, as well as our HP laptop replacement. This is part of our kind of our five-year technology program where we follow and upgrade machines as they become obsolete and older. Our next items for information, we got a Norris Rec Center restoration update. The last item pertaining to the fire is the restrooms and locker rooms in the lower level, and those continue to progress, and we're hoping for early spring reopening. So everything's continuing to make progress on those. And then our last item is the construction update, and Mr. Lamp gave us an update on how Thompson was progressing, and everything's going well. And then kind of, I know it's not part of business services, but last week, Mr. Gaffney and I actually sat in on the construction meeting as observers. And then we got to get a tour by Mr. Lamp and Dr. Chapman, and that was very exciting for me, for sure. But I also talked to Dr. Chapman and Mr. Lamp about me stepping in, not stepping in, but kind of sitting in once a month as an observer as well to kind of report back to the board if you guys had any questions or anything. I know Craig and Seth do a great job of keeping us informed and everything, but I just kind of, something I thought I enjoy and I like to see the progress of it. So I'll be trying to do that as my schedule allows, like I said, once a month. And then our next meeting is February 22nd, and we'll see the food services mid-year update, the fund balance transfers, health insurance update, and then our Norris Rec Center update, restoration update, as well as our construction update for Thompson.
Great. Thank you very much. Yep. Actually, it's time for us to go on. Ms. Weibel and I went on a tour in December, and it was very helpful and very good, and I'd love to go on a tour with you.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's, you know, to see the, you know, all of our hard work and everything and the progress, and I'm super excited to see the finished product. I know we're only in the first phase, but already it's exciting to see, and just what a change that already seems, that just the size of the labs, how big they are now compared to what they were, and at the end of this two-year project, that we're going to have two middle schools that are, you know, top-notch. So
that is great to hear. Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you very much. The next committee that met was Community Relations. Ms. Weibel?
I was going to concur with you about the, I'll take another tour. We'll figure it out. But I would like to see that update. Okay, so the Community Relations Committee met. It was a very long meeting. We're going to work on our time for next time. On January 10th, we recognized two families, the Cantrell family, for the Four Scout Foundation. Over the last couple years, they donated more than $90,000 to the school district in honor of their daughter, Scout, which was amazing to talk about. And then the Mobley family, which brought together over 300 volunteers for wrapping gifts for over 197 kids, almost 200 kids for our district for Christmas, for donated gifts and the wrapping of it and disbursement of gifts to kids that needed some gifts for Christmas. So that was great. We had an update from our student liaisons, Anna Miller from St. Charles North, as well as our other liaison, Samantha Stippich, from St. Charles East. So what they worked on was a survey from students for both schools, and the results were very interesting. They had asked about 4,000, they had about 4,000 responses between the two schools, and the highlights were interesting. So most of the kids had said that they were looking, would love to have finals before Christmas break. So I thought that was an interesting response for us to hear. So we talked a little bit about that at the meeting, and that would be something that wouldn't be feasible until all of our schools had air conditioning. So someday, perhaps. Overall, they were happier with cafeteria food. They talked about bringing back a late start rather than early release. They discussed about how happy they were with the Chromebooks, and there was quite a bit of other information, and it's going to be put together on a spreadsheet for us, and then we can disperse it to the whole board. So that was kind of the highlights of that. We had a speaker in from the King County Health Department, Mr. Michael Isaacson, who I actually work with on several other committees, and he is incredibly knowledgeable about what is going on in King County right now. He talked about their website on King County Health canehealthcounts.org website. So they talked about chronic disease, behavioral health, and income and education. They talked about their Fit for Kids partnership that they have going on with some of our elementary schools, So that includes grants that they utilize. It's Wasco and a few of the other elementary schools for building their internal garden that they use, or they can use it for things for PE. Oh, sorry. As well as he discussed the grants I said about Bell Graham, and then Raising Health Awareness Day. They talked about that. And then the other thing we talked about was his statistics on suicide and opiate usage. So we were able to see some data that he was able to share with us from the county. And I thought that was really interesting, kind of what's going on in the area regarding our suicide awareness, which ties into our Hope Week. And the board can be more aware of what the situation is locally. And so we have some information about that, and then that will be shared with the it was shared with the administration as well. So then we talked about district. Sorry, I'm going to go a little faster. District channel communications. You have all that in your minutes, and we talked about all the different ways that we communicate to the community with the focus mailings, the summits. We had suggestions of a coffee or town halls, so we kicked that around a little bit. That's going to be on discussion for next time in March. We discussed the survey results process, and we had initial estimate over 2,000 responses. That's going to be presented on our March meeting as well, and the board discussed about how we wanted to get that information back, verbatim comments or summary. Also, the email, the school board has a new email process, and so and most of us were there. I think there was only one of us that wasn't there, so we voted on a new response. So currently our process is, just to remind the board, is that an email comes into the board from our constituency, and it is responded to by the administration on behalf of the board, that all the board has seen it. When an email comes in, it is copied to the entire board, all the board sees it, and they respond that it is to the board, and the board has seen it, and then it is assigned to someone to manage. So basically, if it's a specific question for one of our people about finances or transportation, it's kind of farmed out to each individual. If it's board related, it's sometimes up for discussion and then how it's responded to. So that's still a little bit of process underway, but the verbiage in the response was tweaked to be a little bit more warmer and comprehensive. So our next meeting will be March 14th. And anything else you'd like to add, Mrs. Fairgrieve?
No, you did
great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm just going to clarify you that we didn't vote to do that. We'll be voting in a little bit, but we moved it forward.
Yes, thank you. Sorry. No, yep, we moved it forward, and we will be voting on it today.
Be careful with that word. Okay. Thank you.
We discussed it and brought it to a vote.
It had a good,
brought
solid
it to today.
Backing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll get it.
I would like to, just since you're on the docket there, would you please talk about your meeting that you had with Housing Commission?
Sure. And then I have, when you get into your others, the other intergovernmental, and mm-hmm. I have notes on that too. We've been busy, so I will just say that. So, yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a soliloquy here today. Went to a housing meeting on February 8th, which is the committee with the Housing Commission with the City of St. Charles. So in the Housing Commission, we discussed the King County Affordable Housing Fund, which is, and I might be repeating some of this to the board because I'm not sure what you guys know from your last member.
I don't think we've had, I think they had shut down for a while. No, they hadn't been having meetings for a while. So we really haven't heard anything okay. from them in a while.
Because I'm picking this up a little bit from Mrs. Perog, so I'm not sure where we're at. So the King County Affordable Housing Fund is a fund with the county that they can then apply to either building or restoring affordable housing in the county. But it's specifically King County. So two of our members went to go see kind of what they're doing in King County, and they were able to see the presentation. Alderman Payleitner and Liz Eakins, who's their chairperson, went and they did a presentation to them about some of the projects that they're currently working on in King County, and it was a very comprehensive plan and some proposed ideas. So the...
Can I just ask, are you, is this King County or St. Charles?
So this is...
Because there are two.
This is King County, and the reason why I'm talking about it is because the proposal in using the St. Charles funding is to potentially partner with the King County Fund. So the St. Charles Housing Commission has an inclusionary housing fee in lieu that they collect funds for. And that funding is something that they're looking at joining in with the King County Fund. Instead of us using those funds exclusively, they would use it in conjunction with King County. So they went to go see what the King County plan is kind of all about. So that brings us to the second point of what we discussed, which is the inclusionary housing fee in lieu. So if you guys are familiar with, so City Code Title 19, inclusionary housing developer requires developers of new residential development to build a proportionate share of affordable housing units on site or pay a fee in lieu of providing affordable units, right? So, and some of this is for Mrs. Fairgrave too, because it's a bit new. So a fee in lieu payments are made by developers and placed in city's housing trust fund. The purpose of it is to provide and preserve affordable housing opportunities in St. Charles. So just to give you the background. So that's what they're talking about, using that fund in conjunction with King County now instead of independently. Because currently the monies are just sitting in that fund being unused. So they're looking to see how can they utilize that fund. And so that's why they're looking at doing it in conjunction with King County. Go ahead and ask your question. Okay. So part of the discussion was the current ratio in which they're charging developers is up for discussion. So what they're charging right now for single family and for multifamily is something that's going to be discussed to potentially change. So one is a formula equation to get to a single family per single family charge that they charge developers, and then the multifamily charge was kind of just decided upon. So I think they're looking at making that a more strict formula. So that's what they're discussing now, and they're doing some data research, which is great. There's only 5 communities in the Chicagoland area that actually have an in-lieu housing fund, and so they're doing some research to see kind of how they're doing it. So that's kind of the background on it. What's great is we talked about some developments that are going on. So Prairie Winds has started, so that is behind, that's behind the Lowe's in almost Geneva, but it's St. Charles land, and they have started construction. Also, the Crystal Lofts has started. That's the lamp factory on 13th Avenue, and that's going to be 14 units, so not a lot of units, but it's going to be very cool and kind of funky. That's an old, for anyone that remembers that, that's an old factory. It's a lamp factory, and it's right behind the Dimples Donuts, for anyone that doesn't know where that is.
Across from B&L Landscaping.
Yeah, there you go. And so that has, they've got their permit to start rehabbing. The Chaudine development has been approved for 2 units, so, or for 2 buildings, which is 100 units. That's the old St. Charles Mall, right, behind the Jewel on 38. So that has the potential to go into many more units, as you know, but that is a multi-year development. So at this time, we're only talking about the 2 buildings, which would be 100 units, and those are multifamily units. That is one of the developments that is going to have affordable housing. He is going to be providing affordable units versus in lieu monies, so I think that's kind of neat. And then Anthem Heights has started their single family housing. That's 78 units of single family housing behind the Aldi. And then the Charleston Mall is still a concept plan. So I just want to reiterate that all of these projects that we've talked about, these developments, have all been shared with D303 and are in our projections. And they've been shared with Dr. Chapman and Mr. Chazar and Mr. Moore. And so in our projections for enrollment for the next several years, it's all part of that projection number. So we don't need to be concerned about have we included them or not. They have been included, and they've all been working together very tightly with the city about what is coming down the pike. So that is part of what we've been talking about. So there you go.
Thank you. Very good. It's a good thing it's meeting again.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, and our next meeting actually is in March, and then 4 days after that, we have a joint committee with the city council. So it's lots going on.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We have additional meetings. There was a DPTO meeting on January 17th, and once again, PTO people got to, they knew that the next day was going to be the presentation on the 18th, so there was a little conversation about that, nobody knowing anything, but talking about it. I do want to talk about, I think the key topic at that meeting was the parent universities coming up and the centennial counseling offerings that are coming up, and specifically the next parent university. Ms. Smith, please let me know if anything changes or if I got anything incorrect here. But the next one is February 19th, so it's a week from today. Centennial counseling meeting at the office. Is that still? Arcedium. Okay. Well, I would just say that we should check the website. I will just say that the parent university offerings coming up are very apropos, and it's a good thing that and the people that were at the meeting were excited that these things are being talked about and being offered. The one on the 19th is on depression, anxiety, and suicide awareness, supporting children to improve resiliency. And there's one later on the 28th. Very important topic here. Social media and you, a parent's guide. And there'll be panel members, including people that we're very familiar with, including Judge Hull, Rich Wostocki, who's a national speaker, a state's attorney's office. And those ones on social media are really well received. And other just various ones throughout the year that are really good for parents that even just want to check one out. It can't hurt. So that is DPTO. There was an intergovernmental meeting on the, there were two. On the 11th was one, and it was held at Baker. So I did want to mention a couple things that came out of that one, is that the St. Charles Public Library is considered a star library, receiving three stars. There are only 22 libraries in Illinois that have achieved this status. They received some significant donations from families where a loved one or the estate has created a large donation to the library, and they were very happy to receive that, and we'll be looking forward to that as part of their always improving. And they are now part of the large consortium called SWAN SWAN. There are 97 in the consortium, which allows us to get products from or materials from a wide range of libraries. And now you can also check out board games at the library, which I think is don't buy it, just check it out. Not too much from any others, but I would like to mention that the St. Charles Park District has purchased the Sportsplex in the old Moline Factory area there. So they will have, it's two turf fields on the inside, and they have purchased it, and they'll be doing some capital improvements and start with that in the fall of 2018. So I think that is a really good thing for our community. So that was the meeting on the 11th, and then there was another one last week, which I was not able to attend. Ms. Weibel, what did they talk about?
I have some notes, and I hodgepodge them together, so I'm not sure which is what meeting, so... to add to some of that, I think that was the first meeting, is that they are going to shut down the last week of April for 8 days. So just to let you guys know, for their new system, check their newsletter. And then with the Park District, let me see if I can differentiate here. They are adding a slide to racer slides to Otter Cove. So that was pretty exciting, actually, for anyone that goes there. That's pretty exciting. And that they are launching a new website. I think we talked about that the other one. and they discussed the teen job fair. So anyone that, this would be great for high schools if you want to put it on Twitter or something, that might be good, Mrs. Smith. But job fair February 19th from 5:30 to 7:30, the Pottawatomie Community Center. It's for job fair for summer jobs for 16 or 15 and up for high schoolers. So we can help them promote that maybe. Also, the St. Charles Township talked about at the earlier meeting college scholarships. So talk to your school counselors at St. Charles East and St. Charles North for that. And the city of St. Charles wanted to talk about this week, this month, they talked about Restaurant Week is February 26th through March 2nd. So please go and patron all your restaurants here in town. And also, over the summer, there's going to be construction on Illinois Bridge 64. Sorry to tell you. So it's coming. They don't know the dates yet, but it will be over the summer from first to first. So check the city website. There will be lane closures for 6 weeks. I know I hate to be the bearer of bad news with that. But it is definitely coming, and it's an IDOT thing, so nothing we can control there. And then they were talking a little bit just about some residential, as we talked about some of the commercial building, as we talked about residential. The mall on the east side of St. Charles is full, so that was good news. Across from Charleston, that strip mall is full, so they've placed renters or people in there. So I don't remember all the different people that are in there now, but that's all full. So that's it.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Does anybody have anything else they remember? No. And that doesn't even talk about the other three meetings that we had all together in the presentation. So thank you, everyone. It's been a lot. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's for action. The first item on the agenda are the school fees for the fiscal year 2018-19. May I have a motion? Mr. Mannheim, and a second? Second?
Second.
Thanks, Mrs. Fairgrave. Does anybody, I believe it's on for action mostly because it's a public thing that affects the community, wanted to be pulled out and done for action. I think there's very little change in the school fees, but any other discussion?
I think we wanted to just highlight that on the school fees, that there was an increase in need for early learning, and maybe Dr. Pearson could speak to that a little bit.
Early learning?
So at the board meeting, what we talked about was the fact that we actually have we have more students that would qualify for our Preschool for All grant than what we actually currently have participating in it, and that we've applied for additional funding for that grant so that we can increase our spots for Preschool for All, which is for at-risk. But that's not really related to the fees, but we talked about it as a part of that meeting. I think the early childhood fees remain the same.
Okay, thank you. That jogs my memory. Any other conversation? None heard. Would you take the roll, please?
Mr. Gaffney?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkomer?
Yes.
Mr. Mannheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgrave?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. We have a motion on the Mac desktop and laptop replacements. Mr. Mannheim and Mrs. Linkomer is a second. It's a big purchase, so it's on for action. Any other conversation? I don't think so. Okay. Would you take the roll, please?
Mrs. Linkomer?
Yes.
Mr. Mannheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mrs. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgrave?
Yes.
Mr. Gaffney?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Next item are the HP laptop replacements. May I have a motion? Mr. Mannheim?
Second.
Mr. McNally? Once again, it's a big item, so we put it separately on action, but is there any conversation? No? Would you take the roll, please?
Mr. Mannheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgrave?
Yes.
Mr. Gaffney?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkomer?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes.
Yes, motion carries unanimously. We have a motion on the school board email auto response.
So moved.
So moved.
Mr. McNally made the motion. Ms. Wyville seconded the motion.
I was actually planning on seconding as soon as you wanted to move.
Would you, do you want to switch? Okay, as long as I've got somebody. Thank you. This is what Ms. Wyville referred to earlier, and I would like to read it because it is important communication with the community. This is the auto-response for the Board of Education email group, which disseminates directly to school board members and was discussed at community relations. It reads, thank you for contacting the St. Charles Community Unit School District 303 School Board. The board members have received your email. We welcome input from our community and are interested in hearing your thoughts about District 303. It is our practice to provide constituents with timely and accurate information in response to questions or concerns. A member of our district administrative team will be in touch soon. Thank you again for taking the time to reach out to the members of the school board. So I would just like to say I think it is a very good improvement to our process. I want to thank Ms. Wyville and Ms. Fairgreen for bringing this forward. And I appreciate that the administration wrote something and then they rewrote something that better reflected, I think, the intent of the school board. So, that said, is there any other comment on that item? None heard?
I'd just like to say I appreciate the board's openness to a new process and comprehensive way of dealing with the many emails that we get. So thank you to the board.
Just in time, too. Okay, thank you. Would you take the roll, please?
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Ms. Wyville?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreen?
Yes.
Mr. Gaffney? Mrs. Linkomer?
Yes.
Mr. Mannheim?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes, the motion carries. Next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. May I have a motion?
So moved.
And Mr. McNally, in a second.
Second.
Ms. Wyville, is there anything, anyone would like to pull anything from the consent agenda? Haven't heard? In that case, would you take the roll, please, Ms. Schwartz?
Ms. Wyville?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreen?
Yes.
Mr. Gaffney?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkomer?
Yes.
Mr. Mannheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes, the motion carries unanimously. The seventh item on the agenda is the for information, which includes Freedom of Information requests, the Community Unit School District 303 financial reports for November and December 2017, and the Mid-Valley financial reports for November and December 2017. Is there any new business from board members? None heard? In that case, may I have a motion to adjourn to closed session by roll call vote for the purposes of litigation when an action against, affecting, or on behalf of the particular public body has been filed and is pending before a court or administrative tribunal, or when the public body finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the minutes of the closed meeting. May I have that motion?
So moved.
Oh, and I'm sorry, and just one more. The placement of individual students in special education programs and other matters relating to individual students.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. McNally and Ms. Lincoln. So we will may have a well, we're going to just adjourn to closed session. Do we have to take a vote, right? Okay.
Mrs. Fairgreen?
Yes.
Mr. Gaffney?
No.
Mrs. Linkomer?
Yes.
Mr. Mannheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Ms. Wyville?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes. Motion carries.
We didn't, but okay. So we're back in open session. Now it's 8:58. Would you take the roll call, please, Ms. Schwartz? Mrs. Linkomer?
Here.
Mr. Mannheim?
Here.
Mr. McNally?
Here.
Ms. Wyville?
Here.
Mrs. Fairgreen?
Here.
Mr. Gaffney?
Here.
Mrs. Huell?
Here. Do you think I need to read that again?
Yes.
Okay. I think we probably should cross all the T's on this one. Okay. I'm sorry for that error. We need a motion to affirm the January 9, 2018 decision by the superintendent regarding the Uniform Grievance Procedure Complaint number 1718-01. Board Member Linkomer?
Secretary of the Board will read this.
Mm-hmm.
I move that the Board of Education, after consideration in closed session, affirm the January 9, 2018 decision by the superintendent regarding the Uniform Grievance Procedure Complaint Number 171801.
And may I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Weibel. Seconds the motion. Any other conversation? Not heard. Would you please take the roll call vote?
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreave?
Yes.
Mr. Gaffney?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkomer?
Yes.
Mrs. Huell?
Yes. The motion carries unanimously. May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. McNally and Mrs. Linkomer, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unheard. We are now adjourned.